part of the reason I decided to put this topic, caretaking and caregiving, in a dealing with intense emotions program, is the vast majority of the people I've worked with have been in relationships where one person, their life just didn't work. And for that person whose life didn't work because of financial issues, because of social issues, because of substance abuse issues, there seems to be this attraction to someone that can help me heal, someone that can help me solve my problems. Got that? You know, and I think about our substance abuse program where I had read this article about the alcoholic family, and it was sort of a metaphor. It was interesting, but I'll just tell it like it is. There might be a room, an auditorium of 10,000 people in that room, but it's uncanny how the one alcoholic will meet the person that's all the way to the farthest extreme of that auditorium, who's the codependent, caretaking, enabling, I love you no matter what. And those two people, against all odds, will find each other. So the person whose life's a mess seems to have this uncanny ability to find the person that can solve my problems. Got that? Well, you know, when we look at this idea of codependence and we sort of drift to that notion about what does that mean, I want you to be aware that it's not a psychological term. It's not a term that you can look up in a psychological journal. But it's a term that really came to be known by a lady by the name of Melanie Beattie, who wrote a book called Codependent No More. So when I talk to you about that idea of codependent, it's a term used to identify a person that gets so involved in the life of another person that they lose themselves. Notice I didn't say anything about drug addiction. Notice I didn't say anything about financial abuse or financial or poverty. I didn't even discuss the word neediness. But as the backdrop to this, it's been my professional experience that whenever I find a person that's an enabler or rescuer, it's always because they're the pedestal partner on the relationship, on the other end of that relationship with a needy partner that just can't survive without them. Does that make sense to you? Mm-hmm. The problem is that if you're not careful and you overly manifest in the idea that this rescuer, this enabler, is a powerful person, and don't get me wrong, typically they are, what you're not getting is that they lose themselves so much so in the lives of others that they derive their meaning, their identity. And even though they will present themselves as a person that says, Doc, let me tell you about what she did, or let me tell you about what he did, and let me tell you about the spending and the mysterious phone calls, and let me tell you about the way he didn't put money on the utility bill and the electric was turned up, and it gave me this long itinerary, this list of endless items that this person didn't do their job, then the next thing they'll tell me is, but I love him so much, and how do I get him back? See, that's the problem with codependence. We get so involved in the others that we tend to lose ourselves. So what is it to be a codependent? You know, I call a codependent a caretaker. You know, that's my spin. I take the responsibility for others, and I take that responsibility to such an extent that I provide them the resources that they couldn't provide for themselves. So I caretake. I take responsibility for your problems. I take responsibility. So it's been my experience that a caretaker has a learned pattern of placing the needs of others over their own needs. Notice I said learned pattern. Where do you think that comes from? Where do you think we get that learned pattern? You know, I can tell you a lot of adults well recall that their mom or dad said, watch out for your brother. Watch out for your sister. You're the older. Don't you let anybody hurt them or harm them or put them in harm's way. We can also tell you there's a lot of people that believe a woman's job is to support her husband. Even though that's changing as times go, we still have a pretty traditional sect in our society where we teach little girls the most important thing for you to do is fall in love with a good man. Find a good man that will provide for you. And even though we don't talk those terms as much as we used to, it's true and you hear it every day. Sweetie, find a good man. or to the man, find a good woman. And typically what we're talking about is find someone that you can get involved in and invested in. The problem is, in our society today, all of us at times feel so isolated and so alone that there's a natural draw of attraction to someone that you can be helpful to. There's a natural draw to someone you can do a favor to, especially if they appreciate what you've done. And so we have that drift in the sea of life as you're going through your day of turbulence and being pushed by every wind. Then there's someone that needs a little help or assistance, and they give you something that we don't get very much today. Thank you and validation. We don't get that a lot today. You think about it. How often does somebody say, thank you, really appreciate you? So there we are. It starts off innocently at first, but we meet someone who appreciates what we did, makes us feel good about what we did. And we don't realize it, but as time goes by and we either date or we cohabitate or we marry that person, we get into that notion of enabling. So let me tell you what an enabler is. A person who provides a means for someone to live a lifestyle that is above that what they could provide for themselves. Enabler. You provide a means for someone to live a lifestyle that is above that what they could provide for themselves. Technically, that's not bad. You get married, you have children, right? Your partner could not work and provide the kids. Technically, it's sort of an agreement, a contractual idea about fathers and mothers and the duties and responsibilities as such. The problem is, I run into a lot of men and women who provide in excess of these resources that they have through employment to their partner, who is really not doing anything. There are no kids. You know, and if they're unemployed, it's by choice, not by the fact it's because they can work, but they choose not to. Does that make sense to you? But there's no kids involved. You know, the problem with enabling, of giving someone a means, lending them money, fixing their car, giving them rides, the problem with enabling is, on its simplest level, it promotes that person to be dependent on you. So when you see a person that's living in your household and they're not contributing to the rent, the utilities, yep. When I work with parents who have kids that aren't launched and the kids are still living home and the kids aren't paying anything towards the bills, it just creates an environment that teaches that child to be more irresponsible. In a dysfunctional relationship, when you're living with a partner that's not doing their share, why should they ever do their share? Because, you know, you're doing it all. And unfortunately, if you're an enabler, often you are the person that's manipulated emotionally. You're the person that, through guilt and shame, is been conditioned to believe there's something wrong with you, you're not trying hard enough, look at poor me, these things that have happened to me aren't my fault, it's your job, it's your responsibility. And through this notion of guilt and shame, we allow this person to be irresponsible, yet they stay there. Problem with enabling, it reduces accountability, it drains the enabler. You know, this guy that's an enabler, remember where I started this? You're the hardworking, motivated person that's got the job, that's making the money, that's cleaning the house, that's doing the laundry. And, oh, by the way, you're putting your fingers in all the leaks in the boat. And, you know, if you got an extra hand, you're bailing the boat. You know, so you're working, you're in the boat, it's sinking, and you never stop. You run out of energy. And then finally, I don't know about that last bullet, but would somebody read it for me?
Problems get worse over time.
Why do you think they get worse?
Because you're draining the enabler.
Talk to me more. Why do you think it gets worse? Why do you think problems get worse when you're an enabler and there's nothing, you know, you're a good guy, you're a hardworking guy. Why do you think it gets worse?
Pressure.
I agree with you that sometimes it is pressure. There is a lot of stress. My guess, after doing this for a long time, working with a lot of men, typically things get worse because our problems get worse because there's a hidden agenda. The hidden agenda is you didn't realize she brought with her a heritage of depression, or you didn't realize she brought with her a history of worklessness. Not worklessness, an inability to carry on an occupation and sustain that occupation with any degree of predictability. And so the reason problems get worse is because the enabler is initially preventing their boat from sinking, but after a while, as I run out of energy, that other person's hidden agenda, which is the problems I really had, you know, you always think you're doing something good. You always think you're contributing to a solution, but you never realize the problem you're trying to solve is not the problem they got. The problem they got ain't here. And it isn't about you, and it isn't about the house, and it is about finance. It's a long history of mental issues that surfaced starting three relationships ago. Okay? When I look at rescuing, it's a little bit different because my rescuers, my enablers, that's a lifestyle choice. You know, I have had clients, I've been doing this for a long time, and I had a client, very wealthy man. His reported income was about $50,000 a month. The girl he had met, which was 10 years younger than him, was a nice girl, but obviously in his mind, I love her, so I want her to enjoy my wealth and prosperity. So it was very soon after they met, began living together, that he provided her a convertible Lexus. And it wasn't much longer than that that there was children born. And of course, because I can afford it, because I enjoy life, they went to the nice hotels and they had the nice vacations and they had all that kind of good stuff. The problem was, as we did all this, enabling, bringing her to a level of lifestyle that truly was his based on his accomplishments, she kept having mysterious problems. Like her mom was about to file for bankruptcy and can we lend my mom some money? So he would, you know, extend those finances to that person. Well, it didn't take long before he started to realize, you know, if her mom's not having problems and her brother's not having problems, it just seems like that something's wrong with her. Well, needless to say, she was driving and drinking, got arrested for DUI, and now he finds himself as a single dad with mom in jail for running into a car while drunk and personal injury, three people injured, and now there's lawsuits, and he's got a thick wallet or deep pockets, as they might say, and he starts to find that he's in a desperate situation because now he's not certain about his own financial survivability. Well, of the least thing in the world to expect, which certainly no one would have expected, she ran away. He goes home and she's gone. Gone. Little note, I've ruined your life. I can never be the person I want you to be. And he's gone. So she disappeared for about 3 months. When she surfaced, she was living in North Carolina, the Bryson City, Smoky Mountain type area. And she'd accumulated so much debt, whether it be from Visa, MasterCard, or the car she took with her that she didn't pay insurance. She was desperate, and so when she resurfaced begging forgiveness and crying real tears and all that, it cost him about $25,000 to save her. Understand, though, a lot of the problems that she had created, they were due to her irresponsibility. So whereas he had enabled her, well, the problem with enabling is that person never learns to live life according to any type of discipline or responsibility, and then when it goes south, it usually goes south in big ways, and there's somebody there typically to rescue. Why is rescuing bad? Big one, we don't learn from our mistakes. Number two, we don't accept responsibility. We continue a negative pattern, and the big problem is it does give people a false sense of security. My problem with anybody that's involved in a relationship where somebody's sucking them dry is I guarantee you, after a while you've enabled and you're going to graduate to rescuing. When you get used to giving, 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 then that idea of now making loans or going to extreme measures, yep, it's going to happen. Now, I got this idea about reactive versus proactive. Let me tell you something. I wrote this a few years ago, and let me explain it to you. Because unless I explain it to you, it won't make any sense to you. And if you don't understand it, then I'm going to work with you till you understand it. But I have found that some of my guys are what we call reactive caretakers, and some of my guys are proactive caretakers. Let me talk to you about proactive. They know in their heart that this person is out of control, so they set boundaries up to prevent them from having any impact on them. Limited access to the credit cards if they let them use it at all. They don't give them access to the checking account if they give it at all. If they want to use the car, they got to check the keys out. Tell me where you're going. Tell me when you're going to be back. So what I find is, when I got guys that have been so screwed, or women, so screwed so many times before, that they almost hover over the other person. Watch everything they do. Question, where did you go? Who did you talk to? Because in their past experiences, they have been on the short end of the stick so often that they become proactive. I watch you, I measure you, I evaluate you, I grade you. Oh, by the way, in case you haven't caught on to that, isn't that what a parent does with their children? Evaluate, grade, critique, instruct. Well, that's what the proactive guy does. In my professional experience, I have seen, much to my unbelievable sense of what is logical, that there are those people that are reactive caretakers. Sounds crazy, but here we got a person just the opposite. I give you unlimited access to everything. I let you have the credit card and just trust that you're going to manage it appropriately. I give you free access to the cars, the checkbook, and just everything is to your availability. The problem is we become reactive when we've been screwed. You know, I never expected you to do that. I never expected you to treat me that way. Does that make sense to you? And so when I have people that are like this, well, let's go back to the man I talked to that was very wealthy. That was him. Just thought that out of common sense and logic, you would never overextend yourself. You would conduct yourself in a meaningful, responsible way. And why should I be involved? Obviously, I don't need to be involved because you're a person that loves me and I trust you. Of course, when that person has intense emotions, it's because only that they have given too much freedom, given to excess, and because they've been clueless about how they were being misused. Notice I didn't say abused. Misused. So now the anger that comes out is because I can't believe I got screwed this way. I can't believe, for all of my goodness, I got nothing to show for it. So we have two types of people, proactive and reactive. The reactive caretaker fixes by enabling and rescuing. The proactive caretaker inhibits or prohibits. Interesting notions when you look at that. What I want you to know about is what I call caregiving, because if I'm going to take responsibility for others, how about can I caregive? And so you ever hear that expression, I'll walk the walk with you, but I'm not going to carry you? You know, if you've ever talked, there's an organization called Codependent No More. And if you've ever been to Codependent No More, they teach you to not give to anybody. I mean, even if you go out for a cup of coffee, you don't buy a cup of coffee for the other person. Don't do it. Your boundaries are such that you are self-centered. So let me help you with this. Self-centered is when I am focused on my needs and the balance of my life. Selfish is when I take things from your life and to my life to my benefit. When I hear people say, well, you're being self-centered, high five, way to go, that's what I want you to do. It's perfectly okay for you to be self-centered. You guard your house, you guard your life, you don't give, you don't take, you focus on your reality. Nice boundaries, healthy lifestyle. So when I ask a person that's a caregiver, it's a disciplined pattern of behaviors that's allowing me to be helpful to others without taking responsibility. Now, that might be kind of vague, but I'll help you. Years and years ago, middle of the night, I get a phone call. Middle of the night, 2 in the morning. You know how hard it is to wake up when you're in a sound sleep at 2 in the morning? Oh, my God. Gordy. Yeah. Bob. Oh, my God. I need your help. Yeah, man. What you got? Oh, 2 flat tires. I'm in the parking lot. Can you come get me? What? I got 2 flat tires. Walmart parking lot. Can you come get me? Well, how do you get 2 flat tires in a Walmart parking lot at 2 o'clock in the morning? Well, I had a lot to drink, and me and my friends were spinning. The car kind of wet, and it lost control, and my 2 wheels hit the parking bumper and blew them out as the rims punctured my tires. And my first thought was, I'll see you at 8 o'clock. See you in the morning. Oh, man, you can't come get me? No. If you blew out your damn tires at 2 o'clock in the morning, 17 miles from my house, I'll see you in about 6 hours when I wake up. Other than that, check it out. No, I'm not coming. Not to be confused, if you will, let's just say that somebody asks you for a ride, or they say, hey man, can you give me a ride? I said, no, well, yeah, I can give you a ride. If you're here, I will gladly transport you because I'm going that way and I'm going to drop you off, but I'm not giving you my car. I'm not going to give you my keys, okay? I will help you if I'm going that way, but I'm not going to give you my car. Those of you that have been in unhealthy relationships know that sometimes we have boundary issues where I own your possessions, I use your possessions, and then you have difficulty saying no. Well, that all started, if you will, because you overextended yourself into that position of being an enabler, and now you don't know how to get out of it. Caregiving, this is my car. If I'm going that way, I'll be glad to give you a ride. And oh, by the way, if you can't appreciate that, maybe it's time we go different directions. That's healthy stuff. Hard? Yes. But remember, you never take responsibility for another person's life unless there's some agreement, some commitment, some benefit in the form of a relationship. If there's no relationship, there's no commitment. If you're not a roommate or a companion, then you don't venture into those areas of lending things that that other person really hasn't earned the use of. When we look at caretakers and caregivers, caretakers spend their lives enabling and rescuing people who refuse to accept responsibility for their own actions. Caretakers spend their lives enabling and rescuing people who refuse. You know, I started this story off about the 2 people that were in this auditorium, 10,000 people, and how the alcoholic tends to always find the caretaker. They find each other. It's cosmic. And as you look around you, I think you might do your self-inventory, and I'm just guessing from the 4 of you in this room, I'll bet you my hints would be that most of you guys here are caretakers, that you've overextended yourself into the lives of others to the point that you feel like you're busted. It's the emotional hurt. It's what happens when that other person pulls away from you and yanks you, if you will, emotionally to make you feel like you're inadequate, there's something wrong with you because you quit doing that which they became quite accustomed to. Eventually, caretakers exhaust themselves emotionally, financially, and only find that the people they enabled and rescued, somebody read the last line. Read that. Are not there for them. That's the hardest part about all this. You see, if it was you giving to others and they gave back, we wouldn't be in this classroom. Yes. No, you all wouldn't be here. But that's not the problem. The problem is I give, and give. And when it's my turn to receive, hello, anybody here? Where did they all go? I heard a friend of mine, he had this expression. He said, when you turn the lights on, the cockroaches run away. You know? I'm not trying to say your friends are cockroaches, but I am saying when the light goes on that you need help, sometimes with surprise, as they see the light and instead of running to it, they find a dark corner to hide out. Oh, I saw you called. I'm sorry I couldn't call you back. I was real busy when the call came through. And they knew all along what the problem was, okay? Caregivers, if you get involved in other people and you walk the walk with them but don't take their problem, now you're heading in the right direction. And if you're not in a relationship now, heed this warning. The second that person starts to show to you a pattern of past history that is indicative of them having more problems than solutions, run like hell. Run like hell. Yeah. But what happens is, you know, until you've done a topic like this, they put you on the pedestal and they make you feel like you're the omnipotent, most wonderful person in the world. And, you know, there is a certain sickness with this, and the sickness has to do with, we all like to be validated. All of us like to be validated. But when we start to consider that the validation I'm getting is from this person who's training me to where I've got nothing less to give, and, oh, by the way, I've isolated myself to that person, and I'm not really shopping anymore, now it's a problem. Does that make sense to you? If I'm not shopping anymore and I'm giving so much to one person that's draining me, sucking me dry, emotionally, spiritually, financially, then it's a problem. I had a guy call me about this about 2 or 3 years ago, and he said, I want to thank you for that class that you all taught on caretaking versus caregiving. He said, you know, it didn't hit home then, but about 6 months after I finished going through your classes, I started dating someone, and it was very nice. It was wonderful, and then, you know, I found out she had a few bills, and, you know, she never really asked, but I gave her a couple $100 to pay for this, and I gave her a couple $100. And I really enjoyed the relationship. We went out, we partied, we had lots of fun. And then I started asking questions about, you know, well, where'd you go to school? And, oh, you never finished school. All right, well, you know, and where were you working before? Oh, you've only been there for 3 months. And, well, where were you before that? Oh, you hadn't worked for 6 months. Oh, you've been married before. Oh, you got 2 kids and aren't yours. And he said, I'm asking all these questions. And even though the day that I was with her asking these questions, if you'd asked me, was I happy in this relationship, I'd have said, I'm having a ball. But then after I did a little bit of an inventory and asked a few questions to identify the depth and breadth of her life, I ran like hell. And, you know, it's interesting because I'd only been in this, he's talking to me, he said, I'd only been in this relationship for about 6 weeks. And my stomach hurt. I my head's spinning because am I making the right decision? But yet, when I go through those questions and I remembered a lot what you talked to me about patterns and how patterns develop into habits and how people that have these histories tend to have an ongoing history, it was hard, but I just wanted to cool it. She had been spending a lot of time in my house. I just backed it out. You go to your place, I go to my place. We're not going to be doing this anymore. And, you know, it was interesting. He said, do you know within 3 weeks she was living with somebody else? And even though I was absolutely numb with emotional hurt when I found out she moved in with somebody else, I was so thankful that I'd called it where I called it, because I could have been in this 6 years and then gone through this, or 10 years and had kids. This information's not always easy to use. But when we start to look at the big picture and we start to look at the emotional drain that's happening to me, and sometimes it can make a difference. Sometimes. Characteristics of caregivers. Constructively help others. Exercise appropriate roles. Y'all know what I mean by roles? Give me 2 roles that you have. But we talk about the 4 R's. Roles, rules, rituals, and routines. It's something I teach you, something you'll have over and over again. My role as a father is not the same as my role as a husband. My role as a father is not the same as my role as a therapist. My role as, and you can name it, but you have different roles that you play every day. Typically, when I talk about caregivers, we're looking for appropriate roles. I am your boyfriend. I'm not your dad. I am your boyfriend. I'm not your benefactor, employer, boss. I don't solve your problems. I don't critique your problems. I don't tell you how to. You see where we're going with that? And when caregivers are involved in a relationship, we call it appropriate boundaries. I do care about you. But the problem that is here is a problem that is your problem. And as long as we're just friends, I'll walk the walk with you, but I won't solve it for you. When you move up to roommates, commitment in friends is I'll be there when you need me to talk, to share, brainstorm. Commitment as roommates, I do my share, you do yours, but I don't change for you because you knew the way I was when you met me, and if you didn't like it, we shouldn't have been roommates, but that's the way it is. 75% of the men I work with, married many, many years, they're just roommates. They'll even tell me to my face here in class, "Doc, I told Gertie, you knew the way I was when you met me, and if you didn't like it, you shouldn't have married me." Well, you know what? That's a roommate relationship. As opposed to these two, which use these different characteristics, there's 9 characteristics, but I'll go to this one right here. If it's a love relationship, it is truly a love relationship. And I will contrast, you can be emotionally bonded to someone, you can't eat, you can't sleep, you're miserable, you're depressed, you don't want to celebrate holidays and vacations. That's an emotional bond. And it hurts just as hard to break up with someone when it's an emotional bond as in love. But what I find is, for the 20 years I've been doing this, when I have people that have these characteristics in a love relationship, they never break up. Never had one yet. But I have people, they're here, and they say things, you know, like, "You know the way I was when you met me, and if you didn't like it, you shouldn't be here." They never got up here. Commitment and love. "I will spare no emotional energy to problem solve that we may stay together." Commitment, love. "I will problem solve that we may stay together." Notice I say spare no emotional energy. It means if I got to go to a therapist, if I got to talk to a minister, if I got to figure out who I am and why I am. And I'm going to give you a point in fact, and that is I do men's groups. I think tomorrow night and Saturday I'll have about 60 guys total for my men's group. And it's not unusual, those that don't know me, I'll ask the question, how many of you think that after you meet a woman you should change and conform? And very seldom they'll get a hand up. We don't conform, you know, we meet, we go out, but my way to highway. And I hear that all the time. Then I'll change that a little bit. Well, how many of you guys are fathers? And I'll get a couple of hands up. Do you think the person you are today as a father is the same person you were before that baby was born? And they'll all say, "Absolutely not. I am so different. I've learned to be patient. I've learned to be playful. I've learned to color. I've learned to read stories, change poopy diapers. I do things I never imagined." So the idea is that once you accept this idea that you do change, and that men say, "You knew the way I was when you met me, and if you didn't like it, you shouldn't have married me," there's a certain ignorance. Because when we talk about a child, a baby, the willingness to change is because of that deep heart emotional connection and my strong desire to improve that deep emotional connection. But as we get into adult relationships and we lose that idea, then we lose that notion that you should want to change or modify yourself in such a way to get along better, because that's part of love. Does that make sense to you? Part of love. And if you don't feel that way, could it be that there's some problems, undercurrents, and I'm going to pick on 2, you already know about them, with enabling and rescuing. Could it be that in your heart you already know you're being taken advantage of? Could it be in your heart you already know that you're giving more than you're receiving? Could it be in your heart, in your subconscious mind, that quiet place of your peacefulness, you are screaming, "No, this ain't working!" And yet the truth is, the outer mind is saying, "Well, it's all good because we're happy," and the inner mind is saying, "We're not happy." You get into that problem of being disconnected. Who am I? Characteristics of caregivers, they constructively help others, they exercise appropriate roles. Accountability, they strive to be accountable in relationships. I love this 4th bullet. It says, when you are a caregiver, not a caretaker, you don't need to be needed. You realize how sick that is? You realize how many guys and women I know really, really, really find a huge benefit to being needed to be needed. They're not being generous and helpful just to help others because of their good Samaritan attitude or characteristic. They're giving it to get that person to depend on them, to look for them, to say, "Where are you?" and to drive from that person that, "I got to have you in my life because you're that important." When I ask you to take a look at this topic and I ask you to recognize your relationships, I want you to know that our topic is dealing with intense emotion.